Blog Talk Radio.
About, and that's rape and what it means and why it's having such a big effect in this election and abortion and what the taking of human life means in any shape, way, or form. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. We got people in the chat room already. If you want to join in, the number is 347-945-6713. But before we talk to the topic of the evening, first thing I want you to know is that I am working again. And the chat room just pointed out to me that I was exaggerating a little bit and that I have a person in the chat room and not people. Noted and corrected, oh valiant chat room. there I go with my storytelling again, I guess, my exaggeration, my aggrandizing of the story. But I am working again, and I am working at the School for Tomorrow on Bestor Avenue in Rockville, Maryland. I just want you all to know that anything you hear on this station is, or this program, it's not a station. I don't want my chat room to start bellyaching at me again. Actually, I would like them to because it means they're listening. But Norman Knight had a new high of live listeners last week, and we had 15 live listeners during the show, and that was a real gratifying feeling. We only had four actual callers. So one of the calls had about 8 or 9 different people on it, though they were all related to me. I did have a wonderful week with my family at Deep Creek Lake, Maryland, and I want to thank them all. It really was enjoyable. We actually did a show from the shores of Deep Creek Lake, and that was a lot of fun. I know I wanted to, at least in my mind, wanted to do a show on the shores of Alaska. I'm trying to remember the bay I wanted to go to, but that didn't happen. I wanted to eat a mess of smelts in Ohio, and that didn't happen. But I have those thoughts for a future time. Hey, I just got the chat room just went people. Somebody else logged in. That's a real good deal. Now, if you want to give us a call, it's 410-7. Oh, no. God bless it. I always do that. That's my Skype number. Anybody wants to call me on it from a landline, it's 410-773-9941. But anyway, I've been working 2 days. Oh, how about Cape Breton next summer? You're on, baby. I have been there. Somebody wants to know if I want to go to Cape. I'd love to watch the whales on Cape Breton. Oh, but only if we can take the ferry from Portland. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful to buy property in Nova Scotia? I'm there if somebody ever bought property in Nova Scotia. This will take me off the beaten track a little bit. My wife and I went on our honeymoon to Nova Scotia, and it was a glorious 2 weeks. We went to the big game preserve. We stayed at this absolutely incredible hotel in Halifax Court called the Lord Nelson. Very old world. No, it was all just polished wood and no air conditioning. Of course, who needs air conditioning in Nova Scotia, even in August? It's just an absolutely glorious land. I went sailing on the Blue Nose in Halifax Harbor. There's a couple of facts about Halifax that I'm sure most people, well, I don't know, maybe you do know. First of all, it was the terminus of the American Underground Railroad. It's why, to this day, the only real Canadian province, or in fact, city, really, although Toronto, it may all be gone now with immigrants from the Commonwealth, but The only black people in Canada were in Halifax and in Nova Scotia. And the Canadians didn't make any bones about not letting them out of Nova Scotia, not letting the black people out of Nova Scotia. They were welcome to stay there, but not. Now the Canadians are interesting. I love Canada. Interesting fact about Canada. The Canadians, 62% of the people in Canadians own their own property, either their home or their farm or whatever. Of those number of people, half of them have no mortgage at all. And, the Canadians still have water. That's true. And so do the Americans. It's called the Great Lakes. And if all those dry states think we won't fight another civil war for them, they got another guest coming. Someone in the chat room just mentioned how the Canadians still had water. I got this friend that's actually, I've discovered recently, would love to buy, 155 acres of land, two streams flowing across it. Christ, I don't know where you get all that money. 155 acres, that's not chump change. And they don't have tax deferments for borrowing money to buy land or houses in Canada. Unlike the United States, and we wonder why they have no mortgages and almost no, well, very half the number of mortgages and almost no foreclosures on their land. Canada's a very nice place. Somebody actually just pointed up, and don't worry, we're going to get to Congressman Aiken. But somebody pointed out, and that was a shocker when I heard that yesterday, that navigation stopped on the Mississippi because with the drought, the river is so low that the ships can't travel on it. It's not navigable in many places. That's the Mississippi River. Everybody out there hear that? All you climate change doubters, the Mississippi River is not navigable today. I'm sure it will come back in the near future, at least I hope it will. But right now, the Mississippi River is not navigable. Why doesn't somebody call and chat about that? All you climate doubters, all you change doubters, 347-945. 6713 is the number. And the other thing is, I practically got a teleprompter here, and it's really nice. Takes me back to the old days of Norm at Night when we used to cue the host with pieces of notebook paper. But the Mississippi River is becoming more saline every day. Some people claim as far as 90 miles north, it's salt water. I haven't seen any data to that, but it's worth going to look into. And, of course, where would you go to data? But I am working at just this great school. The potential, if we get enough students and stay open, the potential is unlimited for the kinds of things that are being done. It's almost curriculumless. And that is a real positive thing in my mind. The object of the school for tomorrow is to learn how to learn for today. And that doesn't mean there's no content, but it means that the content is such that it's content that you want to know as a learner. Oh, I just, my chat room just gave me a citation on that Mississippi River statistic, and it's true, baby. Salt water invades the Mississippi. The one of those Chinese carp that came up the Mississippi and they're now trying to invade the Great Lakes, the ones that jump out of the boat. It is, oh, now all I can seem to think about, though, is Nova Scotia. What a beautiful place. And Cape Breton Island is, they tell me, is one of the greatest places in the world to whale watch. We actually, you know, we didn't have a tour or anything. We sort of planned our own honeymoon. And, well, we decided that rather than rush Cape Breton, we would leave it because we had to go back to Buffalo to meet the Buffalo half of the family that couldn't come down to Suburna Park for the wedding. And so we left Cape Breton. We didn't go to Cape Breton Island and always promised ourselves to go back. And, oh, gosh, I could move to Cape Breton Island. I could retire there without question. But Nova Scotia is a poor land. There's no question about that. Because the fish, the Russian trawlers came and destroyed the cod fishing. And that's how those guys made their living. And it was, it's just a, wow. It's almost, Peggy's Cove is a nice place to go to. And I liked Peggy's Cove a lot. I do have some great pictures of the fishermen coming in. I like fishermen. I like the life they lead. They're just amazingly hardworking people, you know, and but I don't know. I'm trying to type and talk about my trip to Nova. Oh, and the whatchamajigger, the public gardens in Halifax are breathtaking. And I don't know what they are right now, to be straight honest with you. But somehow I don't believe they're any less spectacular than they were in 1981. Because I walked through them in August of 1981, and it was an absolutely wonderful experience. The smells, the sights, the absolute civility of the people was utterly beyond anything I had ever learned. I mean, experienced. It really was a dilly bar. I'm trying to get a map of Cape Breton Island up on my computer. And let's see what happens. If you've been to Cape Breton or any place in Nova Scotia, why don't you give us a call and at 347-945-6743 or 6713. Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. Oh, I just want a map. Where are maps? Ah, there's Cape Breton. There's St. Anne's. And what I was wondering, let me go back to my chat room. Is it how far, you know, I got some friend that's going to buy land there, and I was wondering if it was near the Highlands Park. Because Cape Breton's a pretty rugged place, you know, and apparently the land is quite reasonable. So that would be, wow. See, well, you know, maybe I get to ride my, now I can't think of what the little robot was called on the, what are they called after in Scotland? Not the fjord, not the K. Somebody help me out there. What do they call those little inlets in Scotland? I was once had the opportunity and missed it, and it's one of the things I think about a lot in my life sometimes in my quiet moments. The lock, the dinghy in the lock. That's it. Oh, gosh. Well, maybe I can redo that on Cape Breton Island someday. That would be a lot of fun. Well, why don't you give me a call here and talk to me? Oh, and if you're going to go up to that part of Canada, you got to go a little to the west and go to St. John's, New Brunswick. And watch the St. John's River reverse its course when the tide comes in. It will freak you out. It is a wonderful thing to behold. The whole river is going one way, and then in the blink of an eye, it seems, the river is going the other way. And it's flowing against its natural flow. The Bay of Fundy has some of the most extreme tides anywhere in the world. You know, boats will sit on the bottom of the bay, you know, with tons of lines, you know, just sagged because they have to put these long lines on them so that when the tide goes out, you know, they don't, well, the lines don't break. And then when the tide comes back in, the boat floats away. And you got to be really careful when you're rock hounding along the Fundy shore because it's real easy to get caught in a tidal pool. You know, and, or when you go out to a tidal pool, all of a sudden the tide comes in. You know, and it's 20 feet of water between you and the shore, 20 feet deep, just like that. I mean, bang. Hey, I got a call coming in. Hold on. Hey, you're on with Norm at Night.
Hey, what's up, too?
Oh, I'm just got sidetracked a little bit. Well, it's not a sidetrack, really. Off what I intended to talk about, was talking about Nova Scotia, Cape Breton Island.
Mm-hmm.
And some people I know are actually looking at land up there, and it made me remember how I wanted to move to Nova Scotia after my honeymoon and be a teacher.
Hmm. Well, that's certainly a different lifestyle, huh? Yeah, I've occasionally had people, say, oh, well, get the hell out of California. They said, we got, they recommend Washington. And there's a little town and county called Tillamook.
Mm-hmm.
And all they do is dairy. They have more cows than people. And they make wonderful cheese, too. I get it down here. And my one friend was saying, like, you know, oh, we got this and that, you know. And there's a community college. And I said, how many? So I said, how many people? He says, 25,000. I said, oh, that's a good-sized town. He said, oh, no, that's a whole county. I'm like, yeah, right. But apparently they have some of the best fishing in the world. There's this bay that comes in. And
are you talking where now?
Washington, Pacific Northwest.
Okay, because I was talking about the Bay of Fundy, and that's the best salmon fishing in the world.
Mm. Yeah, well, we're having our best salmon run in like a decade right now.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, they've just been zooming up here. They're what they call the king salmon or Chinooks. I guess it's the same thing.
Well, the Bay of Fundy, it's tuna. And, I mean, massive bluefin tuna.
Oh, geez, yeah.
You can only fish with rod and reel.
Yeah, it's hard to say which one I like better.
I do like tuna fish.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're allowed, I think, 2 per season. That's it, you know.
You don't happen to know a Cape Breton woman who plays fiddle. I can't think of her name now.
Mm.
She's the best in the Cape Breton style.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Google's for.
That's right.
You know, it's absolutely amazing. Cape Breton fiddlers, that should do it. Some of the regional violin style, which falls within the Celtic music idiom.
Mm-hmm.
There she is, Natalie McMaster. She's absolutely stunning, folks. Any of you out there, you want to hear some great fiddle playing by a very attractive fiddler, actually, also. Go to YouTube and just ask for Natalie McMaster. She also has a, what do you call those, a TED Talk, where she performs with her brother. And it's absolutely astounding. And great stories on how she learned to play the fiddle. She's really something. And I recommend her to you. And I understand they also still play the button accordion in Cape Breton.
Oh, okay. Mm.
And the other thing, in some places, I don't know if it's all, but it may be, you know, just like in Quebec, they have the signs in French and English.
Mm-hmm.
And Cape Breton, they have them in Gaelic and English.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is. I bet you could throw. I wonder if they play that Irish game. I always forget the name of it. Where they hit the thing with the sticks. It's like hockey on land.
Hmm.
Help me in the chat room. Why can't I think of the name? They used to have that great commercial on TV where the guy took the hurling. That's it. Where the guy was taking the free shot, a young kid. It really was. I'd like to try that anyway, although I'm done as far as that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Don't want to be chasing people around on that.
Not at my age. I go to work for 8 hours a day. I mean, it's been really, really weird. It's been a long time, and you should be allowed to rot like that.
Yeah,
that's
funny.
Exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, just last weekend I was, you know, looking through old music and that, and I don't know if you remember a band called Fairport Convention.
I remember the name.
From the 60s and 70s, that's when they were big, you know. And they more or less took a lot of English and Scottish and Irish folk music and in many ways sort of updated it to, you know, sort of a folk rock beat, I guess you'd call it.
What was their name? Fairfield.
Fairport.
Fairport.
Convention.
Convention. Any familiarity with that in the chat room? The Fairport Convention?
The lead singer is Sandy Denny. And, oh, she had an incredible voice. She passed on some years back. But, But
somebody's going old school, very old school.
Yeah, I guess it would be, well, we're talking 40, 50 years, so.
Yeah, well, no, that's pretty cool.
But
the
I think, 60s, you know, you can.
The revival of the 60s is what somebody mentioned.
Well, a cool thing is, you know, you can go to YouTube and find all this stuff. Because people just keep putting it on, all their things they remember, and very often good quality sound, you know. The videos aren't usually much to look at. Yeah, you're breaking up. You sound like you're talking out of a percolator or something.
I was talking at the wall right there.
Oh, okay.
You know, my daydream went off to Halifax Harbor. And the other fact I was going to mention about Halifax, besides that it was the terminus of the Underground Railroad, was that, if I'm not mistaken, and somebody out there correct me, it was the largest port for the British Navy. I mean, eventually bigger than Scapa Flow.
Oh.
But somebody verify that for me. I'm almost positive it was true.
Yeah, are we talking like 19th century or what?
No.
Much earlier?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to just Google. Just Google everything these days.
Yeah, see, I come outside here when I can. Yeah, I stay away from that computer.
Richishflet. Royal Navy Dockyard, Halifax. Oh, it was a British base from 1755. From 1759 to 1905. Well, where did it go after that?
Well.
Now, according to another one, it's always been there. That's really interesting. I'm sorry. It was the big one. The British naval forces withdrew from Canada in 1906.
Well, I guess by then they weren't so worried about a revolt. Although I guess it could have happened.
Simply the Atlantic. It was the Atlantic end of the British fleet. I mean, in times of war, Halifax would become the British base of operations.
Oh, okay.
World War II, it's pretty hard for the Germans to bomb ships in Halifax.
Yeah, they had to wait for them to come back home.
What do you call it? The merchant fleets would crawl up the U.S. coast, then along the Canadian coast, and may take the and pick up the escorts in Halifax to make the North Atlantic run.
Mm-hmm.
And the U-boats would be waiting.
Yeah, if I recall, well, in World War II, they sunk hundreds of our ships.
Yeah,
all along the eastern seaboard.
Well,
and we didn't even provide any defense. I mean, it took a while before somebody woke up, you know.
Not getting off the hook. He violated the Neutrality Act. He protected those ships with U.S. destroyers.
Well, yeah, he did a lot of stuff.
They have given them to the British to do it, but they were U.S. destroyers.
Right.
He should have been impeached for what he did. And not because it was a bad thing to do, but because he broke the law.
Well, yeah.
The Neutrality Act was passed in 1937, 38, those two. And, wait a minute. There's no ferry service from, hold on. There's no, how do you spell F-E-R-R-Y? There's no ferry service from Portland to Halifax?
Hmm.
I thought, oh, that's a heartbreaker. Because it was really fun because it was about a 15-hour cruise.
Oh.
Oh, my Lord. I'm going to scream. It was permanently suspended after 9/11.
Oh.
Oh, but it was this great big ship and you drove your car in.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, you got on about, we got on about 7:30, 8 o'clock. Left the harbor about 9 o'clock after it got dark. I don't know why it waited till dark, but it did. And it was a shocker to me. We actually had a little cabin.
Oh, geez.
And as soon as the ship was 3 miles outside U.S. waters, the gaming tables opened up.
Oh, for God's sake.
It was unbelievable.
Oh, that's cool.
We got seasick, but it was all right.
Yeah.
Well, Carol, still, never, we both woozy.
I never remember being seasick for some reason. I don't know.
Well, we had a bad experience in Boston where we actually stayed for 3 days, and I ate too much fish stew at an all-you-can-eat thing and ended up at Massachusetts General Hospital.
Oh, good God. Ooh.
Yeah, it was not good. And then... While we're there, this crazy man comes in. Claims he's got a bomb strapped to him. And if they didn't commit him to the psych ward, he was going to blow up the emergency room.
Oh.
You know, they didn't even blink an eye. They just started talking to him. They didn't call, you know, they called some security.
Yeah.
But they didn't, you know, like sound the alarm or that's amazing that there's, but why would they stop a ferry? Because they're gripped with fear.
Mm.
Such a pleasant journey.
Yeah.
And you have any idea how much driving it saved?
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I took a ferry from Hamburg to Copenhagen. And you want to talk a monster ship. This thing was insane. It had, I mean, because we took a bus from Frankfurt to Hamburg, and the bus just drove right on it. And we got down below, there were rail cars, everything you could think of was down there. I mean, that was enormous.
Right, and this, I think I saw a program, you know, like on World's Hardest Jobs or something, you know, one of those kind of programs about the guys who drive those ferries.
Mm.
And they're pretty amazing. But yes, I am working. I am so excited. That I get to make up courses about anything I want.
Oh, my. Well, I hope you'll use some good judgment with that.
Well, you know, I'm going to make some history electives, that's for sure. And I got to do some math stuff, too, because that's math and computer stuff. That's why they brought me aboard. But, you know, actually, I was thinking about doing an elective. The title is simply, What Do You Want to Know? What I don't, we'll find somebody who does for. That's how you learn things. But anyway, so before I forget, I want to talk about this guy. Rape is back. The United States presidential election. What is what we're talking about? Rape.
Okay.
I mean, what is the matter with this country?
This particular guy is clearly uninformed. That's the nicest thing I can say about him.
Okay, well, let's hold on. Somebody asked me an interesting question in the chat room. What subject am I teaching? If I had real balls, which I don't, I'd make a, what would I say, not a cheap imitation, but an imitation nonetheless of a friend of mine who did this great course that I watched unfold about totalitarianism, which I've loved since I was a child. And the 20th century Atlantic. I'd like to, I thought about that and, you know, really investigate why people kill each other. You know, I mean, Germans aren't the only ones who did that.
Oh, well, can't keep blaming them.
No, you can't. The Russians did.
Well, I just watched a documentary about Herbert Hoover and the Great Famine in Russia in 1921. Now,
yeah, he actually tried to save them.
Well, yeah, exactly. He lobbied tirelessly. He was Secretary of Commerce at the time.
But we wouldn't
get
even
food there.
Right, we wouldn't even recognize the government.
Well, yeah, and then part of the problem was the government kept obstructing the flow of food, which is why so many starved and didn't get help for like a year late.
The other thing you have to remember, the Russians and the Poles were fighting a war at that time.
Yeah, but see, they...
And most people don't know about that war.
Well, most people don't, you know.
They signed the peace treaty, at Brest-Litovsk, which is often confused with the peace treaty that the Russians signed with the Germans to get the Russians out of the First World War because it was in the same city.
Yeah.
I wrote a paper about that.
Even though the film itself did not accuse the Soviets, I'm getting a lot of feedback right now. They didn't say it exactly, but the two main groups were the Cossacks and the Bakshirs, and of course they all hated the Soviet Union. The Bakshirs hated the Cossacks, and this was, it almost seems like it was standard practice in Russia. You know, if you didn't like people, you starved them. Because then 10 years later, they did the same thing in the Ukraine, you know. So.
That's not, well, they didn't starve them.
Well, okay, they took all their food.
They did take their food.
They wouldn't give them
to grow food on.
Let's go back to 1921, dude, okay? They did take all their food, and they even took the grain that was the seed grain for the following year. They took all of it.
We have a referee here in the chat room right now.
Oh, good, okay.
What they did was, if you didn't want to work on the collective, you couldn't have any land. And if you didn't work on the collective, you couldn't have any of the collective's food.
Yeah, of course, this wasn't their food. This was these people, you know, we're talking way to the east, you know, and the foothills of the Ural Mountains, you know.
I know who we're talking about. Uh-oh, the referee's typing. I would say he's probably giving us a dissertation. He knows his shit.
Mm-hmm.
Stalin took all of the food of the Ukraine in 1931. And they exported it. And they fed the people who worked on the collectives. I have no argument with that.
Okay. They didn't
starve. The other guys could have come and worked on the collective. They chose not to.
Oh, God. Okay, let's have an analogy here. Suppose I gave you a choice between being a slave on a cotton farm or starving to death on the side of the road.
Yes, they did starve. There's no question about that, referee.
Well, it's a direct result of their actions. It's deliberate. Deliberate.
They weren't asked to become slaves. They were asked to join the
collective. A surf on a collective is no better than being a slave, Norm. The Soviet people were enslaved from day one of that freaking revolution they had.
That is nonsense.
That is absolute truth.
That revolution freed them from a God-blessed absolute monarch.
So they went from being serfs to being on the collective. What was the difference?
The dignity of collective ownership.
Oh, God, there's no dignity in that. That's like being an ant in a colony.
I don't want to talk about it.
Absolutely destroys the human spirit.
It does not destroy the human spirit to work for a collective goal.
Really?
What destroys the human spirit?
I guess you didn't read Animal Farm. I don't know. Shit, I read that when I was 14 years old.
I don't deny that Joseph Stalin was a counter-revolution.
Yeah.
He was a czar himself. If Trotsky hadn't been it on the Russian Riviera vacationing when Lenin happened to die, things could have been very different.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, referee. I know all about the NEP and the new economic policy. And they could buy and sell little pieces of their own. Yes, that's true. But he also industrialized the country. Well, Stalin actually did a better job of that. No, Lenin did not go forward with total collectivization. But in order to participate in the NEP, you also had to work on the collective.
Yeah, well.
What's my point? I don't even know what my point is.
I don't know. You're trying to tell me that it was a favorable lifestyle to be in a collective. Or to be a slave in a mine in Siberia or Or impressed into the military. I don't know what.
I am telling you that the majority, the vast average Soviet life is better after the revolution than it was before.
That's a possibility, but I don't think it, I don't think we're talking about a significant difference.
Oh, I think you're talking about a very significant difference.
Well, I don't know. If Joe Blowski has a 40-acre farm and he's making enough food for himself, he doesn't need you. He doesn't need your stinking revolution.
I mean, we collectivized our workers, too. And we, they didn't quite starve them to death, but they were slaves.
I don't know what you're referring to.
How about 1650, whatever, the first slaves came to 1865 when they were finally freed.
Yeah, well, we will take responsibility from everything from the revolution on. What the English were doing before that, that's their business, and the French.
Wait a minute. That communism works. Is that my point? No, not exactly. What my point is that there is another way to view economics than capitalist economics and interest economics.
Yeah, well, you know, there's no question that there have been successful revolutions. They were more or less temporary. And I would say Cuba is a good example where the general condition of life improved for nearly everybody.
In Cuba, absolutely.
Right. And in China, you can say, in China, you can say that up to a point. But they had so many crazy radicals running around. Now, well, look at now how they are now. With their, I don't know what we want to call it, semi-capitalist society.
Well, okay, there's some activity going on here in the chat room. I don't know if you feel about no names, please. It is important. There's no question about Adam Smith wrote The Wealth of Nations. And that's the capitalist Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And a criticism was written of it, and a very valid criticism. And that's Capital, Volume 1.
All right. Well,
Marx was a sociologist of the first rank. Karl Marx was one of the inventors of sociology. Wait a minute. I don't know this word. I'm embarrassed. Kleptocracy.
Oh, kleptocracy. Yeah.
Somebody help me with it. Reverse Robin Hood. Okay,
people,
thank you.
Kleptocracy is when the government steals from you.
Right, reverse Robin Hoodism.
You know, like a kleptomaniac, same kind of thing.
So the government steals from the rich and gives to the poor?
Oh, something like that, you know. But see, under Adam Smith, the same sort of thing happened, but it was voluntary. Under Adam Smith, you had a progressive tax structure.
Stop. If anybody thinks people volunteered, rule by thieves, I like that. Thank you, chat room.
Mm-hmm.
If you think anybody volunteers to work in a factory, you've never worked in one.
No, that isn't what I'm saying. I'm talking about taxation and government. And under Adam Smith, the wealthy were expected to pay the majority of the taxes.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
No, they weren't.
Only property owner. There was no. He did not believe in income tax whatsoever. The bulk of taxation went to property owners.
There's. You know what? You know what? Everybody thinks that the only kind of tax is income tax. The government raises money all kinds of ways besides income tax.
But if you read Wealth of Nations, what he says is he only agreed with property taxes, luxury taxes, and some excise taxes. So the bulk of that, the common man would never see any of it.
You know, you sound like you're in love with Atlas Shrugged, for God's sake.
I'm not in love with it, but I pick what I like out of it, you know.
Oh, and how about the Fountainhead? Is that one right next to it in your bookcase?
Actually, no, I don't have a copy. I haven't read that in a very long time. But, you know.
Architect. I always make some up.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem with the way liberals interpret Atlas Shrugged, you know, they always try to push you into this absolutist corner, which is the same thing. Well, it's the same thing like pushing a Christian into a corner and making him believe the Bible literally.
She painted that corner, fans.
But do you know, okay, here's one thing. Think of some of the people she didn't like. Primary on her list, libertarian.
I don't even know who she did like.
Yeah, well, it's actually hard to find people she liked. She didn't like feminism. She didn't like gays. She didn't like most of the social movements through the 60s and 70s, actually.
Well, they weren't objective.
Well, yeah.
I just, the one thing I want to get out, because I'm running out of time here and I don't want to lose it. The one thing I want to get out, she liked her young grad school boyfriend.
Oh, well, I can't, you know, whatever she said.
Anyway, I can't blame her.
At that age, if she could get some nookie, that was okay. I have no problem.
I want to get this out. The question of rape shouldn't be a question at this day and age. And if somebody says no, and you keep saying yes, it's rape. Now, if a serious question becomes, and I don't know the answer to this, the serious question becomes, is the potential life that is created have any rights?
Mm-hmm.
And because we have the right to choose, at least by how we interpret it now, we have the right to also choose to end that life.
Well, I don't think anybody has the right to choose except the woman in that circumstance. There is no authority whatsoever over her choice to do what she wants to do. I don't care if it's religion or government. It's traumatic enough, you know?
Right. I don't understand it. I mean, if there is a cooperative father, or starve without health care, if there's a cooperative father with a cooperative mother, they have the right to choose abortion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know of two instances, cases where rape occurred, and one person you know, in fact.
And these were
strangers. And if a pregnancy had occurred, why would they ever want to prolong the experience for another 9 months? I just, you know, but it's their choice. You know,
I've had, I guess you'd call it careless or carefree relationships here and there. But I believe, at least I hope I believe that I was always prepared for the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know because I never faced it. You never know until you face the bad one.
We aren't talking about rape. We're talking about a consensual thing, right? I mean.
Right, but the issue here is I think this guy Aiken, he makes me feel like he is trying to pretend this innocent life, right, is concerned about, and it's not.
Oh, of course not.
And that just hurts me. And on that note, we'll bring it up next week. Hey, thank you, everybody. We had a wide-ranging
We took a world tour, dude.
Yes, Nova Scotia, Halifax, Cape Breton Island, the Highlands Park, Cape Breton Music.
Ukraine.
Union. The early days, right through to the end.
And the Atlantic Seaboard, we were there too.
Yes, the Atlantic Seaboard, don't forget that. And
we mentioned Buffalo. Now we did, we'll go there.
We went to Buffalo, yes we did. But anyway, we'll see you next week, and it was a great Norman night. Thank you all for coming. I'm out of here.
Okay, dude, take care.
All right, bye. Bye-bye, chat room.
I am not responsible for CIA policy. I am responsible for you, and I'm not prepared to send you into a situation that's primed for you to fail. Never mind the state doesn't want us to jeopardize their deal. What you're proposing is akin to flying to Cuba for 3 hours to try to turn Castro's son.
I have an idea of going up the opposite side of the globe. We both raised ourselves in the absence of strong parents. We traveled by ourselves. We learned other languages. We chose a life of service to our nation. I may not have met him yet, but I already know him. If anyone from the State Department sees you, you will turn around and fly home. If you meet with Saeed and he turns you down, you will fly home. If you even think you're about to get caught, you will fly home. But yes, you have 3 hours. Don't make me regret this.
Snyder's flavored pretzel pieces. It's not just a pretzel, it's Snyder's house.